This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for this program. 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. We're joined at the start today by Mark Ballard, who will be there for the finish line of the 2021 regular legislative session. And lawmakers are going out with a bang rather than a whimper. And before we get to other matters, a heated dispute on the House floor yesterday between Representative Melinda White, a Bogalusa Democrat, and Representative Alan Seabaugh, a Shreveport Republican. This was over House Bill 159, which would allow victims of domestic abuse to obtain protective orders before they experience physical violence. And Alan Seabaugh said Melinda White didn't know the ramifications of her bill. And then she allegedly told Seabaugh, as she was dragged away from the House floor, "I'm going to get my gun and finish this, or let me get my gun and finish this, and we'll finish this." So White returned to make an apology, and House Speaker Clay Schexnider will meet with White and with Seabaugh to try to make peace in the lower chamber. Mark Ballard, what in the world is going on?
Well, you pretty much described what had happened. However, it all kind of happened right in the center aisle of the floor of the chamber. She was Seabaugh basically came up and said, "Oh, you don't understand anything about this bill, you know, and you're going to cause all sorts of problems with people and their guns and break up families and that sort of thing." And she took offense of that. She is a domestic abuse survivor herself, and just found the overall tone insulting and lost her temper. We've seen lost tempers before. This one was just right in the middle of the chamber, and she was kind of hustled off into one of the side rooms where they handle bills until she calmed down and then came back and explained what was going on and apologized for it. So, but we've seen it. You know, there was Stuart Bishop from Lafayette and Robbie Carter from Greensburg had to be separated just a couple of days ago because of arguments. It's at that time of the year. It's at that time of the session.
Right, and a few years ago, there was a rumble at the River Room downtown between a couple of lawmakers.
Yeah, that was a couple of years ago with Norby Schaber from HOMA and Stuart Bishop from Lafayette.
Well, in the story by Blake Patterson, White is quoted as saying she's wired like a racehorse by nature and said she was running on little sleep and steroids after dealing with an illness. "My father comes out of me when my mother should," she said. "My father was a fighter."
Right.
Well, fortunately, there were no fistic encounters and no guns involved in this dispute.
Well, yeah, I think that Ted James was right there and was able to grab her before she decked Seabaugh, which she could have done. And so, I mean, and in truth, Representative Seabaugh does prick a lot of nerves,
even with fellow Republicans sometimes.
Yes, even with fellow Republicans sometimes, and Representative White is very tightly wound. That is true, but very passionate as well.
Well, we want our lawmakers to be passionate, but in the old days, people were actually killed on House floors in the United States. Let's hope we don't go there, and I say that with all seriousness.
Including a former governor. So.
Well, yeah, a former governor from our state right there in that building. You're right, September 8th, 1935. Let us not forget that. And that's probably the reason why there will never be guns permitted in the Louisiana Capitol, where the lawmakers want guns everywhere else, Mark Ballard.
This is true. but the lawmakers, the legislators, some of them, I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but some of the legislators do bring guns into the state capitol.
Illegally.
Well, the sign says don't.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I can only.
I know that you and I can't bring in.
No, but you know, in a situation like that, you can only imagine that if somebody got hot enough, as we saw at the Benny's car wash earlier this week, guns can cause damage that cannot be redone. Let's hope the lawmakers don't allow guns in the Capitol. In Michigan, a listener notes, last year though they had people with shotguns in the chamber. These were spectators who were trying to intimidate lawmakers, and you know what? That might be an intimidating stance if it were allowed in Louisiana.
Well, particularly the kind of automatic weapons that these the Proud Boys or the folks that dressed up in military garb and came into the state capitol with automatic weapons, that would be intimidating, I imagine.
Well, it was a busy news day yesterday, and story front page advocate, the chairman of the state board that oversees gambling in Louisiana, resigned his position the same day he was likely to face questions from a legislative panel about actions he took as state police commander in 2019 after the death of black motorist Ronald Green in North Louisiana. So this one was a bit of a surprise, and it is something that even adds more scrutiny to what it was a terrible tragedy.
Yeah, and he was up for confirmation. There's an advise and consent role that the state Senate holds, and he was up for having his interview in public before the Senate and Governmental Affairs Committee. And there had been talk around that some of the committee members were going to question him intensely about this, since he was the commander of the Monroe unit, the Monroe Barracks, when this happened. And there it is.
Well, Mike, it's Noel. Is that how he pronounces his last name?
I think so.
Mike
Noel.
Mike Noel. And so that just adds to the scrutiny of this case, and Governor John Bel Edwards has been rather tight-lipped about it.
He has, and I think it probably came as a surprise to the fourth floor as well. At least that was the sense that we were getting, that they weren't expecting him to quit so quickly.
Well, Mark is covering the Capitol along with many others for the Advocate, and a mandatory kindergarten bill cleared a final hurdle, and it did so in grand style. The vote was 38-0 in the Senate, and then in the House, 70-32. So there you go. This will likely be the law of this great state of Louisiana.
It will be. If you have a 5-year-old, they're going right now, you can choose whether to go to send your children to kindergarten or not, and now you will have to. And at 5 years old, by I guess September the 30th, means that you're going to have to send your child to mandatory kindergarten. There was a lot of opposition to it from the homeschoolers and the conservative Christian groups, but in the end, people recognized that mandatory kindergarten, as is done in most states, is ought to be done in Louisiana.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief, The Advocate, Ray in Prairieville. Hi, Ray.
Hello, Jim. Thanks for taking the call. This is a big question for Mr. Ballard, and I'll be writing a letter on this also. But U.S. News and World Report rates Louisiana the 50th worst in the state on just about every thing of quality. The only way we can get out of that is to spend some more money on schools, roads, whatever. Do you think that there's any chance next year the legislature might actually approve any kind of sales tax?
All right. What about that to perhaps alleviate some budget pressure?
I think the sales tax said there was an effort to extend and maybe make permanent the temporary sales tax, the almost half-cent increase that was used to balance the budget a couple of years ago. And that went by the wayside. They were going to use it to fix up the roads and bridges. And that went by the wayside because of the optics of extending what was to be a temporary sales tax. and they're now trying to divert money from, I believe it's automobile sales into kind of coming up with a fund that will take care of maintenance on a regular basis and not just kind of put it off year after year as we have done for more than a decade and now have a $14 billion backlog of work to be done.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard. And we do want to note as we head to the break that ExxonMobil officials have pulled the trigger on an estimated $410 million modernization project to make its Baton Rouge refinery more competitive. And Exxon, of course, ExxonMobil, is a major economic engine in this city and gets massive breaks as a result of that. We'll talk about anything on your mind with Mark Ballard. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle's back producing today. Your number 877-217-5757. A line open for the Capitol Bureau Chief of the Advocate. A couple of listeners asked about the status of House Bill 159, the legislation that would expand Louisiana's definition of domestic abuse to include behaviors like coercion and control. It is scheduled for a debate today. So hopefully Melinda White and Alan Seabaugh will be on their best behavior. And, Mark, do you think the bill will pass?
I think so. It's had a lot of support in the among the legislators. It is opposed by the National Rifle Association. And though they have been working with Representative White to kind of come up with something that is a good for them as well. And so I think it will pass once it comes up. And when that's going to be, it's got to be today. It's got to be before 6, but when exactly, I'm not sure.
Charlotte in Iberia Parish. Charlotte, you're on Talk Louisiana with Mark Ballard.
Let's see, this is Patrick.
Okay, Patrick, you hold tight. I hit the wrong button, but Patrick, you take a back seat for a moment for Charlotte. Go, Charlotte.
Mark, would you tell us how much the state's tax revenue is given away as rebates and how that would negate any need for talk of instituting new sales taxes?
All right. What about tax
rebates? How much is given away? I didn't catch that. In rebates and tax breaks?
Yes.
I believe it's several billion dollars. The exact number I would have to look up. But, I mean, we're talking about $3, $4, $5, $6 billion. However, though each one of those tax breaks are protected, I guess, or supported by special interests. And every time that they make an effort to try to go through that list and say, we don't really need this one or that one, the special interests come out of the woodwork, and they're unable to get that stuff done. That's what they're hoping to do with the this revamp, which may get passed today, would be to get rid of the federal income tax deduction. That would save us several hundred million dollars, and it doesn't really have a constituency.
Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Hey, so the temper tantrums and the domestic disputes in the House, I remember Karen Carter Peterson was infamous for them. She destroyed someone's birthday cake. And then when Bobby Jindal gave his, his speech at the beginning of the year, she stormed out the door, made a big fuss about it. I told them they should have locked the doors, not let her back in. But I see this mostly amongst the Democrats. Like White, she's a Democrat. Is it fair to say that Democrats do this more than the Republicans, and should there be some kind of disciplinary action?
All right. It's all the Democrats.
I know what side he's coming from, but I would say that the only punches that were ever thrown were thrown by Republicans at each other, what happened yesterday was prompted in large part by Representative Seabaugh, a Republican, poking at a hole that is very sensitive to Representative White. So I'm not sure it's a partisan thing at all, but I think it has to do with an emotional and passionate people arguing for issues that are important to them.
Well said. Now, Mark Ballard yesterday reported that Louisiana may be on the brink of changing its official state song, and most people probably think the official state song is You Are My Sunshine, as Mark reports, but actually it is Give Me Louisiana, a 1970 tune by Doralice Fontaine. It's not the Jimmy Davis You Are My Sunshine. And the new Louisiana state song, we call the cultural song, would be Southern Nights, sung by Glenn Campbell, a number one hit, and written by Alan Toussaint. So Mark Ballard, is House Bill 351 going to make it to the governor's desk?
It's on the governor's desk right now. And, boy, talk about an issue that raises passions. There is a confusion about it because You Are My Sunshine was added as a state song, but it was not the state song. And that was so they have been very passionate about protecting their kind of nebulous status over the years. And now Sunshine will be there'll be no equivocation. The law will be straightforward that it will be the state Louisiana song, and Southern Nights will be the state cultural song. And it's going to be spelled out with, I'm assuming, if the governor signs this. So,
yeah, I don't think the governor's got bigger battles.
I really had never heard of until these debates started a couple of 3 years ago, is out. It's gone.
Okay, Rose in Mid-City. Rose, you're on with Mark.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. The representative was a survivor of abuse, so I think she knows what she's talking about, and I think you need to listen to people who get hurt by other people in violence and control. Thank you very much.
Well, I think Rose is right on.
Yeah.
Okay. Mark is with us for a while longer, and there is a line open, 877-217-5757, Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on.
Good morning. Yeah, Mr. Ballard, is it fair to say that the Republicans have had a president of 30,000 lies and bragging about observing teenage beauty contestants undressing, and the Democrats haven't?
Okay. I think Dan is answering Patrick's missive about Democrats being pugnacious. In addition to what you've said about former President Trump, he also was a guy who at the podium would talk about beating up protesters and how in the old days, the good old days, they'd be taken out on a stretcher. And, of course, Donald Trump, just looking at him, is not in the condition to do it himself. He would get some henchman to do it for him. And you can, I think, make claims that both parties, when tempers are short, say things sometimes that are intemperate.
I think that's clear. That's clear. They're just people first.
People first. So any surprises headed for the finish line at the Capitol today?
Well, it's one surprise is that the sports betting system procedures has not cleared yet. It's going to clear today, I think, in a way. It's going to have to clear today. It's been in conference, and they're working out the final details. I don't think there's anybody disagreeing with it, but they want to make sure to get the wording right, and that's why they use the conference committee. So sports betting will come out. The governor has said he's going to sign it, and mm-hmm. So we could be able to wager on football by the fall. This tax revamp that they said that they wanted to take care of, it is also likely to come out today. It has also been put behind closed doors to try to figure out all of the ins and outs of it. They're doing a lot of stuff behind closed doors this time, and it likely will come out today as well. I think that's the main thing. And then also there is some sort of way to fund the infrastructure that we had talked about earlier with the extension of the sales tax increase. And mm-hmm. They have a plan now that they think that will work by tapping into the motor vehicle sales. And so that will come out today. I think those are going to be the three main ones. and it'll all have to happen by 6 o'clock.
877-217-5757 for Mark Ballard. A listener points out a story that's in the Advocate today from staff writer Hallie Parker, a proposal encouraging Louisiana industrial plants to report and correct their pollution violations in exchange for reduced fines and keeping some information secret from the public has survived the legislative process headed to the desk of Governor Edwards. Efforts by oil, gas, and chemical companies to create such a program date to 1997, and so that's one that environmentalists do not like. We'll see what the governor does, and as we head to the break, we'll hear what is likely to become Louisiana's new cultural song from the great Glenn Campbell, Pride of Delight, Arkansas. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard of The Advocate with us for a few more minutes, and we are slated to hear from Billy Nungesser in Alaska. But it was Thursday, June 10th, 1971, exactly 50 years ago today, also a Thursday, June 10th, 2021, Bobby Jindal was born in the city of Baton Rouge. At the age of 24, he became secretary of the Department of Health, the state's largest agency, Rhodes Scholar, graduate of Brown University, later became commissioner of higher education, congressman, lost a close race for governor to Kathleen Blanco in 2003 and won twice in 2007 and 2011 for the highest office in the state. The 55th Louisiana governor tried to become president and couldn't get one delegate. And his career got off track when he was all of 37 years old, when he was chosen to provide the rebuttal to President Obama's first State of the Union address on Mardi Gras night, 2009. And for those who have not forgotten, let's go back in time 12 years ago.
Good evening and happy Mardi Gras. I'm Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana. Tonight, we witnessed a great moment in the history of our republic. In the very chamber where Congress once voted to abolish slavery, our first African-American president stepped forward to address the state of our union.
All right. Well, Bobby Jindal did not look as presidential that night as Barack Obama, and some say he never recovered from that moment, Mark Ballard.
A lot of people have said that, and I think there's truth to it. He came across as like kind of a kindergarten teacher teaching kindergartners, and a lot of people took offense at that, and it was a poorly done speech. There's just no two ways around it, and I think before that time he was considered the rising star of the Republican Party, and then after that time not so much.
Antonio and Gonzalez. Antonio, you're on with Mark.
Good morning, gentlemen. My question is, Louisiana is a Republican state, and I remember years ago Mr. Jim said it will always be a Republican state, but when you hear that we always ranking lower at the bottom of these ranks, how does that make Republicans feel?
All right. I don't know that I said they always. I didn't say that, but I said in my lifetime it's quite likely that we will have Republicans who win the presidential vote in Louisiana, and right now they're winning all the statewide offices, spare one. But Mark, your thoughts about Antonio's comments?
I guess to be fair is that the Republican Party now comes from what was the Democratic Party, 50, 60 years ago. These even longer, I guess. They basically switched from Democratic to Republican, and that we have been at the bottom of the list for so long. I mean, that has been brought up. I guess Speedy Long was the first one to bring it up when he ran for governor back in the 60s. Was it the 60s? I mean, but that far back,
well,
we've always been down at the bottom.
Speedy actually ran again in the 1980s against Buddy Romer and Edwin Edwards and Jim Brown and Billy Tozan and Bob Livingston. Mark, it's been a pleasure. Let's do it again next week if you're not taking a vacation, which you certainly have earned. But it's always good to catch up with Mark Ballard at the Capitol. Should be a busy day, and we'll keep you posted. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
This is Jim Inkster, and we are welcoming back to Talk Louisiana, a familiar voice. in an unfamiliar place. Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser joins us from the capital of Alaska, Juneau. Why are you in Juneau, Alaska, Governor?
Well, we're up here doing a restaurant takeover, but we're partnering with the seafood folks in Alaska to promote domestic seafood, also our tourism, and we've got a lot in common with Alaska: oil and gas, seafood, and tourism.
You said a restaurant takeover?
Yeah, we go out and we bring a chef from Louisiana. We cook great Louisiana seafood for their media and all the tour operators and people up here. And we also partnered with the seafood folks up here as we work on legislation to fight domestic imports without inspection. And so it's a great opportunity for us to team up with the two biggest producers of seafood in the whole country, Alaska and Louisiana.
You've gotten to know their lieutenant governor, Alaska's Kevin Meyer, a bit, haven't you?
Yes, Kevin was one of the lieutenant governors that helped us pass a resolution at the Lieutenant Governors Association in 2019, getting all the lieutenant governors to support an inspection fee on imported seafood, 5 or 10 cents a pound, allowing them to hire a lot of inspectors to inspect more of the imported seafood and make a more level playing field for our domestic seafood. We also got a chance to visit with the governor, speak at the House yesterday, and discuss some of those things as well.
What's your impression, Governor, of the great state of Alaska?
Well, they tell us the weather the last 2 days is absolutely beautiful. It's about 55 degrees and sunshine. They usually get rain all year this time of year. But the weather today is beautiful, the snow-top mountains, and some great fresh seafood. We visited a couple of the plants, and the seafood they're packing here will be on the shelves in Costco in Louisiana within a week. And so they ship fish all over the country, fresh halibut and great seafood from up here in Alaska.
Now, if somebody from Louisiana is looking for an adventure, this is a big one, a long ways away, but as you say, a beautiful state with a lot of natural resources. And what about people from Alaska? Do you think you can coax them to come to Louisiana?
Well, we've already working while we're here on setting up a trip for them to come down and do the same thing in Louisiana. And in August, we actually had dinner last night at the restaurant that actually won the King of Seafood several years ago. We have that competition at the National Restaurant Show in New Orleans. Our King or Queen of Seafood goes up against 14 or 15 chefs from around the country. Alaska actually won it 2 years ago, and that chef will be inviting another chef down with a whole group of people in August as we have that competition in New Orleans again.
Now, you're a foodie. What did you have for dinner last night?
Well, I had some great halibut last night, and for lunch today we had some fish tacos. You can't not come here and eat the fresh fish. It's caught fresh and unfrozen, kind of like we eat redfish and trout and drum and flounder back home. Their fish up here is absolutely delicious, especially when it's caught fresh and goes right to the plate.
Now, we're talking about a state with a huge land mass, absolutely huge, the biggest state in the United States as far as land, but not a whole lot of people. How have they handled COVID?
Well, I tell you, they had a serious outbreak at several of the plants that really put their fish production back, but they're doing well now. You're right. Louisiana will fit inside of Alaska 13 times, I'm told, and they like to brag that they're 2.5 times bigger than Texas.
Not 2.5 times the number of people. That would give them 100 electoral votes. They're not quite there.
No.
They've got 3. But it is a beautiful state, and is this your first trip?
It is, and a great opportunity to meet with elected officials and really talk about some of the similarities we have in protecting our domestic seafood, the oil and gas industry, and, of course, tourism is big up here as well. So those are three industries that we really have a lot in common on, so it's great to be able to visit with those folks and collaborate on things we can work on together.
Do you plan on replicating this with other states?
Absolutely. Our team was in Arizona last week doing restaurant takeovers. We're going to be doing it in Tampa, I think, next week. I'll be at a lieutenant governor's conference in Miami next week, so I won't be going. We do these all over the country. We get so much more bang for our buck in marketing, advertisement, and media exposure. Plus, we're promoting tourism. Our chefs go around those restaurants talking to folks. It makes people want to come to Louisiana. And like I said, we get 10-to-1 return on our investment over just buying media time in those states. It's a little bit of work, planning, a lot of scheduling. Our team does a great job, but it really does hit home for us in getting people to travel to Louisiana.
And tell us about the chef you brought with you.
Well, I tell you, we've got two. Samantha Carroll and her husband, she is the head of the seafood board. They actually had a TV show for a while on the Food Network, and they got known by winning the seafood competition we have in Louisiana. But Chef Mike Brewer of Newall House Kitchen, he's up here. Chef Brewer is put on a great display last night and partnered with their chef, Neil, who won the competition in Louisiana several years ago. So they teamed up last night and put on a great spread of Louisiana and Alaskan seafood. We had the lieutenant governor there, Speaker of the House, and several elected officials and a lot of media from up here in Alaska. So it was a great time. We'll be doing another media event tonight, and then we'll be on a plane home early tomorrow morning.
Well, you have to take some time to get there and to come back. It's not a hop, skip, and a jump, is it?
No, it's not. We'll gain 3 hours when we get back tomorrow. So I think we get back 6 or 7 tomorrow night. We leave out around 5 in the morning. So it's an all-day trip, quite a ways to come for 2 or 3 days. But it was well worth it from the exposure and the people we got to meet working on some issues together. So I'm excited about the partnership.
Well, be safe, Governor, and good talk.
Thank you, my friend. I'll see you soon.
That's a deal. Take care. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. We're joined now by Chris Tomlinson, a noted Texas journalist. And he has written about something that is near and dear to most people in the Lone Star State and many Americans. The book is called Forget the Alamo, The Rise and Fall of an American Myth. The Alamo has loomed at the center of Texas identity, a concrete link to the state's 10 years as an independent nation. Its legends comprise the beating heart of Texas exceptionalism. The Alamo is an American touchstone, writes Chris, a symbol of national resolve. The problem, Chris and his co-writers Brian Burrow and Jason Stanford say, is that much of the story we've embraced isn't actually true. What's wrong with the myth and the legend of the Alamo, Chris Tomlinson?
You know, it's like many myths. It's makes us feel good. It helps us understand who we think we are. But, you know, when you dig into the facts and you look in the details, you find out it's a lot more interesting, a lot more complicated, and a lot less to be proud of.
Well, Davy Crockett is an American hero. Have we given him kudos he does not deserve?
It's interesting because, you know, before the Walt Disney miniseries, Davy Crockett was a footnote in American history. Yes, he fought in the Creek Wars. He was a congressman, but he was a subject of ridicule. He was kind of a cornball character, and he only came to Texas after his political career fell apart. You know, all this ideas about him being a hero and doing all these crazy things, that's all invented by Walt Disney. It's not supported by the facts.
My goodness, you're poking at the bear here, Chris.
Well, you know, I haven't even spoken about the proud son of Louisiana, Jim Bowie.
Yes.
But no, Davy, one of the most important things we discovered was Davy Crockett did not die fighting at the Alamo. He was not swinging old Betsy over his head. He surrendered. He was captured. He tried to talk his way out of the battle and was executed by Mexican soldiers on the orders of Santa Anna. But no, he did not fight to the death.
Jim Bowie, you mentioned him, proud son of Louisiana. He's another iconic figure. Does he deserve the praise he's received through the generations?
You know, Jim Bowie ripped off a lot of people in Louisiana with fake land deeds. He was under federal investigation. When he went to Arkansas, he did more of the same. The feds chased him there. He went to Texas. He would take slaves from pirates who'd been illegally brought to Texas and smuggle them into Louisiana and then, you know, pretend to be a revenuer and then collect a reward for finding these illegal slaves in Louisiana. He was a con man through and through. And by all accounts, a very angry one at that.
Well, there's no piece of history more important to Texans than the Battle of the Alamo. And here you are saying this whole myth we have is a fraud. I suspect you're ticking off some Texans.
Oh, no, there are a lot of angry Texans right now. And it is true that so many people tie up their sense of self, their identity, who they are in so many of these foundational stories. But at the same time, these foundational stories can also be horrible to others. So, you know, we talk to Hispanics and Tejanos and Chicanos in Texas who'll talk about the humiliation of making that trip to the Alamo when they were in fourth grade or seventh grade, about how that was the moment they learned that they were the enemy, they were the other. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, if it were just, you know, a good-hearted thing like Santa Claus that did no harm, then sure, let's believe in it. But so many of these myths that we grew up in are designed to perpetuate a white supremacy that is harmful to a group of people who will soon be the majority of Texans.
Well, the struggle for independence is part of the Texas lore, and the sausage of myth, as you write, was made in the Jim Crow South. And as uncomfortable as it is to hear, celebrating the alimony, that was a Freudian slip. The Alamo has long had an echo of celebrating what you call whiteness. Why so?
Oh, it's the whole narrative of Texas is about heroic Anglos. We call it the heroic Anglo narrative, is that you have, you know, all of the heroes are white. All of the villains are non-white. It's a good guy versus bad guy thing. You know, the whole idea of the Travis drawing the line in the sand, that was invented 38 years after the battle and has no basis in truth. And yet the Daughters of the Republic of Texas have put a strip of bronze in front of the church, Alamo Church, and said, that's where this took place. And there's also this Cold War feeling to it. You know, we here are these Americans standing up to the hordes of foreigners who don't share our values and we have to fight against. It can't be seen in any other way.
The book from Chris Tomlinson, "The Forget the Alamo: The Rise and Fall of an American Myth." You note that in its first 15 years as an Anglo colony, Texas profited mightily from slave labor. Stephen F. Austin, another iconic Texan, known as the father of the Lone Star State, felt that Americans would only move to Texas to farm cotton using slave labor. And you note that the heroes of the Alamo included slave traders, slave owners, drunks, swindlers, and all kinds of nefarious figures. So will this book perhaps change the narrative?
Well, we're hoping that it will. I hope that it will, because frankly, I think the truth is a lot more interesting, and there are so many more lessons to take from it. Mm-hmm. I mean, certainly these people were creatures of their time. You know, I don't mean to judge how they live their lives by today's standards, but in choosing who we're going to honor today, who we're going to put up on a pedestal, how we're going to remember the Alamo, whether it's as a 300-year-old mission that has had many iterations and thousands of people associated with it, or do we turn it into a proto-Confederate monument celebrating a 13-day battle that lasted all of 45 minutes and was really all about keeping people in bondage? You know, that's we have to have a new narrative. We have to have a broader one.
Another listener, this is Howland Monroe, asks about Sam Houston, who's the only American to have ever been governor of two states and is a Texas legend. And his reputation has been largely kept intact, but does he come across unscathed in this?
Well, Sam Houston is the one who basically created the Alamo myth. He had refused to send reinforcements to Travis. He had asked Bowie to blow up the church, to blow up the Alamo, and bring all the troops back to Gonzales. But when he learned that the Alamo had fallen, he needed an excuse. He needed a way to explain this blunder. And so he created the idea that these men sacrificed their lives intentionally to slow down the Mexican army, that this was the Battle of Thermopylae in Texas, that these Texans were Spartans. He propagated that myth within 72 hours of finding out about the battle. That's probably the only way that we mar Houston, is explaining that he's the origin of this lie.
Well, some of these state leaders have not responded kindly to your work. You note that Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick has tweeted, "It's time to draw a line in the sand on political correctness in our schools." Former presidential candidate and governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, says that some whack job wants to purge the teaching of the Texas legend. So you're getting some pushback.
Oh, I fully expected it. And, you know, in Texas, it's the law that that teachers have to say the defenders of the Alamo are heroic. They just passed the Texas 1836 Project, which is going to promote the myth, to promote a patriotic education. But, you know, history lessons have always been political. But every generation needs something different from their history. And I think that the days of saying, you know, Anglo's good, Mexican's bad, those days are long past. And I'm disappointed that politicians still are getting votes because they promote that idea.
Let's take Mitchell and Sherwood. Mitchell, you're on. Please be brief.
Hey, how you doing? Good evening.
Yes, sir.
I just want to say this man is telling the truth about everything he said in history. That's why these Republicans don't want nobody to know the true history about America, that the true terrorists that they really are.
All right, and Barry in Mid-City. Barry, you're on. Good morning, Barry. Please be brief.
I wonder how people in Texas are going to feel about all this.
All right. What about the people at large? As you note, Houston, for example, is the most diverse city in America. That is correct, the city where Chris lives. What about the people in Texas?
You know, there are nativists and traditionalists who are very angry with me and my co-authors, undoubtedly. But I can also take some comfort in the Hispanic community in San Antonio who is excited that...
All right, we do have to roll, but the book is Forget the Alamo. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.